Welcome. Good morning. I'm excited to continue in our series of Spiritual Ninja Warrior, Romans 8. Our theme verse, where we got that from, is this: "No, in all these things, we are more than conquerors through him who loved us." That's why our bumper video was the young adults, and I was in there kind of hidden, thankfully. But that's why our bumper video was us running through an obstacle course, and it was a ton of fun just hanging out with Dick Crabtree. He is 90 or 91, and he got up on the obstacle course. He wanted to go through the whole thing. It was so much fun. And actually, like the star of that video, I too knew I wanted to be a ninja warrior from a young age. Check out this picture of me when I was just a little guy. I'm on the right. That's my identical twin brother, Landon, on the left. And we were pretty fearsome little ninja warriors. I remember one Halloween, actually, it was a few years before this, because I still thought trick or treat was one word. And I remember going up to a guy's house in the door and said, "Trick or treat." And he looks at me, says, "Yeah, which one do you want? Trick or treat?" "Trick or treat." He's like, "Yeah, what do you want?" And I like just carry the basket away. Like, I'm pretty sure I got candy out of it at some point, but I wasn't ready for such a deep philosophical question at the age of what do you want? And really, the impact of that question hit me 2 years ago. I was reading through the Gospel of John, the very first chapter, and the first words of Jesus in the Gospel of John to some prospective disciples are, "What do you want? What are you pursuing? What are you seeking? What do you want?" You know what they said? "It's the God of the universe, come down in human flesh. What do you want?" And they say, "We want to see where you're staying. What's your hotel like, Jesus?" I'm like, that had to be a little anticlimactic for him. He's like, "What do you want? Do they have good rooms there?" But I think he says, you know, "I can work with that." So he says, "Come and see." He invites them into a relationship with him, and the rest of their journey through the Gospels, you can kind of see Jesus taking them and growing their desire for something more. He's growing them into godly desires and away from fame or glory or revenge or anger, whatever it is. He's growing them into deeper desires. And really, he's asking the question, are you ready for more, or are you satisfied with the substitutes? A popular phrase is, "The road to hell is paved with good intentions." Have you heard that? The road to hell is paved with good intentions. Yeah. I would say it a different way, actually. The road to hell is paved with weak intentions. Maybe weak and good intentions. We're really good at weak intentions. I want this, and then tomorrow I want this, but I want that too, and there's a squirrel, and we're all over the place. Like, I want it all. And I mean, I do the splits while straddling the fence between, "God, I want a relationship with you, but I'm not sure I can let go of the world or this sin or these desires." And then I look down, I'm like, why is this so uncomfortable? Why is my prayer life difficult? And I just hear that question again from Jesus. What do you want? What do you want, Logan? Today we're talking about prayer, overcoming a weak or difficult prayer life. And, you know, that sounds good, right? How many of us struggle with prayer? Are there any honest people in here? Just, do you struggle with prayer at times? I do. And it can be frustrating because we just went through a series about prayer like last year, not that long ago, 8 or 9 weeks. We went through a book. I've read books. I got a degree basically in prayer, and I still struggle with it. Like, what is up with this? We have free time. If you don't think you have free time, just check your screen time at the end of every day. It's like, we have free time to pray. We have resources. We have people who would help us. And still, it's a struggle. And so today, really, as I'm thinking about this, and based on our text, we really don't need today, at least, another sermon on practical helps for prayer. So I'm not going to give you, you know, the next new strategy or new fad for you to try out. Really what we need is just ask some tough questions about our desires and our wishy-washy intentions. Do you actually want a relationship with the God of the universe? The God who refuses to fit in our boxes, who refuses to let himself be made in our image, the God who loves you too much to leave you where you are, to leave you in the lies you have about him, about yourself, about others? Do you really want a relationship with the God of the universe that wants to just take over, come in, and fulfill everything in your life? Let me answer that for us, because I think we do. So we do, yes. You're here, well, unless you got drug here or guilt tripped into being here today, you're probably here because, yes, you want a relationship with God. I mean, we could be getting ready for football. We could be smoking some meat or just man, that would be great. But you're here. And so I think at some level we do desire that with God. Here's the issue, not enough. We want God. Just not enough of him. We want an experience with him, but we're not ready for the whole thing. Sometimes this is what it's like. I love this image. It's the vending machine. Sometimes we treat God like a vending machine. I know what I want. I know what I need or what I want God to answer. I want this result in my life. So I go, I'll take E5 today. All right, good, got it. And then we kind of walk away for the day. That's sometimes how I approach prayer. I'm gonna go, put my time in, get out of it what I should, and then it's over. And that's just a pretty bad image of our life of prayer. Here's a better image. This is an icon by Andre Rublev. It's about the Trinity, the table. And guess where the open spot is at the table? Where the viewer is. And so everyone who looks at this, it's captivated Christians for centuries. You're invited to participate in the relationship of God. You're invited to the table. And I don't really know what's up there. Like, it doesn't look that great or appetizing, whatever's in the bowl. But that's not the point. It's about the relationship that you're invited to, regardless of what's on the table. So the question is prayer really about your agenda? Or is it about being with God regardless of what's on the table? Regardless of the circumstances you're in or not in, the results you're getting or not getting, is it really about being with God? Because that's what prayer is. Ruth Haley Barton, she says it this way. Prayer is all the ways in which we communicate and commune with God. The fundamental purpose of prayer is to deepen our intimacy with God. It's a personal relationship with the God of the universe. That's what prayer is. And so it's really broad. And ultimately, here's the logic in today's sermon. If it feels like a weird sermon today, it kind of is. Only partly because I'm the one preaching it. The rest of it, it's just a little different than usual. Here's the logic. The more you desire of God, the more you will pray. If we desire more of God, if we can reach into us and find that desire, our deepest desires for intimacy and unconditional love, you'll pray more. Usually we go kind of from the bottom up. If we have the right tools to pray, then we'll experience God and we'll grow to desire him more. Today, it's top down. If we desire more of God, we'll find a way to pray. We've got the tools. We've got the resources. We'll find a way. So that's what we're talking about, desire. And there's three invitations from our text. So turn to Romans 8, if you're not there yet. Turn to Romans 8. And I gave you just a little outline, if you've missed any of the previous weeks, to show you where Paul's at in his flow for this chapter. The first 17 verses are about life in the Spirit. Life, now that the Spirit indwells us and we're empowered to live a different way on this earth. And then verses 18 through 30, he goes into the glory to come. Last week, Brian talked about some of that. The best is yet to come. So it's not just like life in the Spirit right now. That's just a taste. There's more coming. And then Paul's kind of like, if that's too good to be true, the last few verses, he says, it's going to happen. It's for sure. The triumph of faith. And today we're going to look at desire and that exercising our desire will help us on our journey towards heaven and towards God. So look at verse 26. It's kind of the start of our verses today. And it starts with this preposition, in the same way. And so right off the bat, we need to scoot back a little bit so we can figure out what Paul means when he says in the same way. So we're going to start reading in verse 19, and we'll just read through verse 23, and then we'll jump to verse 26 and 27. Here's what it says, verse 19, "For the creation waits in," check out all the desire language, "eager expectation for the children of God to be revealed. For the creation was subjected to frustration, not by its own choice, but by the will of the one who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be liberated from its bondage to decay and brought into the freedom and glory of the children of God." There's a lot of big words in there, and it's a lot of clauses stacked on top of each other. Paul likes to do that. But basically what he's saying is, creation, guess who brought sin and decay into the world? Humanity did. And now that humanity is experiencing the redemption and the resurrection, we're actually helping to bring God's presence and redemption into the world. So what the world is groaning for, we're helping to bring into it. So really cool. And then let's keep going. Verse 22, "We know that the whole creation has been groaning as in the pains of childbirth right up to the present time. And not only so, but we ourselves who have the first fruits of the Spirit groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for our adoption to sonship, the redemption of our bodies." So creation is groaning, we're groaning. And now it says, in the same way, verse 26, in the same way as the things we experience, we bring to creation so that it also experiences it, the Spirit helps us in our weakness. We don't know what we ought to pray for, but the Spirit himself intercedes for us through wordless groans. And he who searches our hearts knows the mind of the Spirit, because the Spirit intercedes for God's people in accordance with the will of God. So this is really cool. What Paul is saying is that creation is yearning for something more, and we help to bring it to that. And we're yearning for something more. And the Spirit, part of the Godhead, is drawing us into that as well. So creation, humanity, and God are all united in their desire for more. And that word, groaning, it's this word stenogmos. It's inarticulate groans and sighs that are just too deep for words. It's a really cool Greek word. And it denotes the language and the longings and desires that well up deep within the soul and can't be expressed simply through words. It's just when you hit that spot and you're like, there's gotta be something more, God. That sigh, is this really what the world's like? I want more. So creation, humanity, all of us were united in our desire for more. And so three invitations from that text that we just read to help us connect with that desire for more and to grow it, grow our desire for God more. Three invitations, and the first invitation is this: be honest. Be honest. If you want to grow in intimacy and in your walk of prayer with God, you have to be honest. Intimacy never happens in deception. It never happens in shallowness. It never happens in ignoring what's really going on. It only happens through honesty. Honesty. Verse 26 reminds us that it's in our weakness that the Spirit helps us. So not kind of where we're like, I think I got it together today, God. Not sure if I need your help too. Not in our self-sufficiency. The Spirit, he's groaning out for us in those areas where we're weak, where we're hungry for more. Charles Spurgeon, he's a great preacher. He said, "The best style of prayer is that which cannot be called anything else but a cry." Just when we touch that honest place and we say, "God, I need help. God, I blew it. God, please meet me here." You remember the tax collector and the Pharisee when they're at the temple praying? Yeah, and the tax collector is like beating his chest. He's like, "God, have mercy on me, a sinner." And the Pharisee is over here like, you know, "God, thank you so much for not making me like everyone else who actually needs your help. I'm just so good." And who left justified before God that day? The honest prayer, the tax collector. Because he could say, "God, I need you, and I believe that you want to help me. I am broken and I am loved. It's an incredible thing to say. So honesty, it cuts through that mask of contentment that we sometimes wear and that Satan uses to keep us satisfied with the substitutes of this life. I'm doing okay, I think. No, be honest with God. And so be really practical about this tonight. When you pray, or this afternoon, when you pray, be brutally honest and blatantly honest with God. More so than you think you need to be. He already knows this is for your benefit. God, I blew it today. I thought that watching TV would give me more satisfaction than spending time with you. That's honest. God, I thought that if I accomplished a lot today, I would feel good about myself, and then I wouldn't need to trust you and who you say. Whatever it is, be that brutally honest with yourself, because that will connect you with God and his desire for you. I know the most difficult prayers often that I pray, too often, is when I just mess up in marriage and say something I shouldn't or do something I shouldn't with my wife, Leah, and praying that night together before we go to bed, and I just have to be like, God, I'm sorry for being a terrible husband today, and please help me be a better one tomorrow. That's honest. And it hurts. And that's good, because that connects us with the heart of God and right where the Spirit is lifting us up. Be honest. The second goes really hand in hand with honesty, and it's this: be hungry. Be hungry. Your deepest desires are only met in a relationship with God. And so you should be hungry. That's what Paul is saying. Don't get rid of your desires. Don't try to kind of make them softer than they are, or be like, oh, it's okay, I think I'm okay. Sharpen them, refine them, feel your stomach growling and say, yes, I do want more, God. This broken world makes me want more. It's this hopeful hunger that moves us toward God. Remember the Sermon on the Mount? Jesus, here's what he says: blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. If you want to be filled with the presence of God, there's got to be an opening there for it, for him. A hunger. Any Panera fans in here? Yeah? Yeah? Okay, so the best dish at Panera is the mac and cheese. And I kind of think of it like this. You order the mac and cheese, and it's like $30 for the bowl. Just kidding, it's 10. And you get it, and you look at it, and you're like, man, I could eat 8 of those. And I really want to. And then you take a few bites and you kind of black out a little bit, and all of a sudden it's gone. And you're like, no, please, I want more. My stomach's still growling, like I need more. But you know, you don't want to fork out your next child to pay for it. And so that's really the same thing. That's what Paul is saying. That's what we're talking about today. If you can't feel your stomach growling for something more, you should be. Your spouse should not be meeting your deepest desires. Your kids should not be meeting your deepest desires. Your family, the money, the job you have, the work you do, the service you do here, none of that will ever meet your deepest desires. But we kind of just act like, oh, well, I'm really doing okay. And as Christians, we have this notion that it's because we should be content. Like, we don't want anyone to know that I want more, God. Is this really all there is? We think that it's kind of like, maybe people will judge us if we say that. There is a tension there, because we are called to be content, but we're called to be content in the hunger, with our hunger, knowing that God will satisfy it one of these days. We're content because it's temporary, not because it isn't there. And so get hungry. Be hungry. A.W. Tozer, he says this, we have as much of God as we actually want. You want more of God? Get hungry. Augustine puts it this way: the entire life of a good Christian is in fact an exercise of holy desire. I love that, holy desire. By desiring heaven, we exercise the powers of our soul. And that's what Paul wants for us today, to get hungry. And if your prayer life is difficult, if you feel like God isn't talking to you, if it's stagnant, if you're suffering, if you're in a sticky spot in life, accept that. That's a gift to help you desire heaven even more, to desire God's presence even more. Be hungry. And finally, the third invitation today is to be loved. Be loved. Isn't that sweet? Be loved. No, it is sweet, but that's so true. If you do not have an experience with the personal love of God for you, you will never desire to be in his presence. You will never want to be in his presence more than you do today if you are not experiencing his love for you. There's a kind of a funny scene in the movie Gandhi. The young Indian lawyer, Mahatma Gandhi, he's walking down the streets of South Africa with a white clergyman, which at the time was against the law. And so there's these white South African young men come and confront them, and they're really getting pretty worried, like they're gonna get mugged or killed or at least vandalized in some way. And all of a sudden, a voice shouts out from the building above them, "Hey, let off!" And it's the ringleader's mother screaming at her kid to get out of there. And so the clergyman exclaims, "My, what good luck." And Mahatma Gandhi looks at him and he's like, "I thought you were a man of God." He says, well, I am, but I don't expect him to plan his day around me. And so it's kind of funny, you know, people laugh, but it's terrible theology. Like, it's terrible theology. We do this all the time, that God, he's so big, he's so important. I mean, he's running a universe. Like, he's got things to do. Surely he can't bother with little old me. I mean, I don't know that he pays attention to little old me. And when we do that, we're actually making him smaller than he is by trying to elevate his bigness, his authority, whatever it is. No, he's transcendent. That's who God is. That's who we worship, that he can personally care about every single one of us in this room, and it doesn't dilute his attention for any of the rest of us or, quote, the big things that really matter. He can do all of it at the same time. So God is concerned with little old you. He chose you. God's greatness is precisely what allows him to concern himself with the insignificant and plan his day around me, anyone, and everyone as he chooses. And guess who he chose? Each of us. And that's what we see Jesus doing. He gave his time. He gave his life for us. Look at this verse from Job 16. This verse is incredible. From the Old Testament, it says, "Even now my witness is in heaven. My advocate is on high. My intercessor is my friend as my eyes pour out tears to God. On behalf of a man, he pleads with God as one pleads for a friend." Jesus is pleading for you. And it matches up with Romans 8:34, the last verse of our text today. "Who then is the one who condemns? No one. Christ Jesus, who died, more than that, who was raised to life, is at the right hand of God and is also interceding for us." So it's not enough that one member of the Godhead is interceding for you. Jesus himself is whispering in the ear of the Father at every moment on your behalf, saying, "God, this person loves you. They need you. Help them." There's an older woman at the church where I used to serve, and her son had two kids, her grandkids, and he was really destroying that family's life, like making really poor choices, destroying his kid's life, his marriage, his relationship with his parents. Everything he could do wrong, he was doing it. Like, and it was destroying her. And she would come into church on Sunday and we would have a time of prayer. And I'm telling you, to hear a mother pray for their son who is destroying himself, it would bring her to tears. She would be sobbing and groaning and sighing. And it's just this image of, "God, please help him, this intercessor." And it blows my mind that God is doing that for each one of us, just pouring out his heart for you, pouring out his heart for me, as our creator, as our father, that he loves his child and he wants you to be fulfilled. He's praying for you ceaselessly because he loves you. And so today, really, just those three invitations, can you be honest with God? Like brutally honest with God. That will help you grow your desire for him. It's not gonna grow in deception. Can you be hungry? Feel your stomach growling, maybe it's growling right now. Let that remind you of spiritual hunger. There's more than this earth has to offer. And be loved. If you don't experience God's love, you'll never pray more. You'll never have a better prayer life because you won't desire him. And hopefully, if we accept those three invitations, all of us can say and live this mantra for today. I want God more than anything else. I want God more than anything else. Can you say that with integrity? Let's pray. Father, we do love you, and we want to desire more of your presence. Help us in the places where we don't, where we get satisfied with substitutes. Lord, challenge us to more. Help us to hunger and thirst for you. We love you, we praise you, and thank you that you're with us on this journey. Amen.